Very excited to introduce Dr. Teitelbaum, even though Dr. Teitelbaum doesn't need any introduction, especially to all you guys, because you've gotten to know her over the period of the course. And Dr. Teitelbaum is an amazing healer. And what is the name, Vaidya?
He fell asleep.
Prana Vishar. There's a special category in the Shastras called Prana Vishar. What does it mean, Vaidya? Reclaimer of prana. So she... It's a very special title, and there's lots of Vaidyas, there's lots of good Vaidyas in the world, but some Vaidyas are extra good, and Vaidya Mishra has recognized that quality in Dr. Teitelbaum, and her work speaks for itself. You can go to our YouTube Sva Health channel, and you will see the dozens of testimonials. And the thing is that she just has no restrictions. They walk in through her clinic, and she'll just take them on. So no matter what the problem, what the imbalance, what the chronic ailment is, bring them on. She'll just wrestle with it. And then, you know, before you know it, she'll be calling Vaidya. It's like, oh, my God, I have to tell you. I have another amazing story. So she just keeps them coming in. So we are so, so fortunate to have Dr. Teitelbaum also doing this wonderful work with us. And we are very excited today because she always takes things further, one step further. And today she's going to tell us about the wonderful effects of magnesium and the transdermal absorption and use of magnesium for our health and how it can help us all as SWA experts personally and for those that we are helping. Dr. Teitelbaum, welcome. We're so happy to have you here.
I'm so happy to be here.
Thank you.
This is an amazing class. I'm so excited to be here. And we should give Vaidya a hand for having this. And thank you. I remember when I was first learning Ayurveda, I would lie awake at night and think, there's so many sick people and there's so many people suffering. What happened to the Vaidyas and that consciousness of the ancient rishis that cognized the Vedas? Where are they now? We need them now. And then Vaidya Mishra showed up at my doorstep about 15 years ago, and I sat with him for 15 years as he grappled with some really difficult problems. The first problem was he tried to give our patients herbs in the typical way that they're given with tablets or teas, and it took him a few years to figure out that in America, the liver is so strained from taking bad food and such a high reliance on pharmaceuticals that everyone's liver is so corrupted they could no longer handle swallowing the herbs orally. So luckily he has a direct contact with his family lineage and he can cognize what to do next. So first he thought, since most of the patients we're seeing are very complicated and they need lots of herbs and we can't give them so many because the liver can't handle it, he cognized how to make the transdermal creams where you apply it through the skin and it bypasses the liver and goes in. That was a phenomenal thing, but the problem with that was that he could only put so many herbs through the skin. Not every herb can go through. So the next thing was he cognized how to make the glyceride drops, which you'll be learning in the next course how they work. He described a little bit this morning. So we can give herbs just like that, the vibration of the herb, in a lot of water, and sip it slowly throughout the day so that it slowly comes in the liver and it doesn't make the liver more angry than it already is. So we're so grateful that he has that direct contact with his family lineage, and they give him so much inspiration to make all these hundreds of herbs. If you ever think about it, how could one person make so many things? And it's because he's in direct contact with them. In fact, I think he's the only Vaidya who makes these transdermal and glyceride preparations. And lately, every time I speak with him, he's making more and more things that I'm certain no Vaidyas are making anywhere in the world, like glutathione cream, which is made from food. It's not synthetically made. Or he's making alpha-lipoic acid, see? People are making those things, but they're all synthetically made, so they'll have a side effect. And one of the great things he's made in the last few years was transdermal magnesium. And it's one of the things I use a lot of in my practice. And I want to show you why I use so much of it and why it's so important for our health. So, without further ado, first, let me explain a little bit about what magnesium does in the body, and then the correct way to take it, and why we give it transdermally. And you're going to really end up learning how to feel this in the pulse towards the end. So pay close attention in the beginning. So first, we'll go through these facts. Magnesium is called the lamp of life for a good reason. First of all, it captures light from the sun, that pranic energy, and it turns it into energy-rich molecules that are easy for the cells to use. And it's bound to the very center of the chlorophyll molecule. That's why eating leafy greens are important, as long as you cook them, and we'll talk about that in a minute. Chlorophyll's identical to hemoglobin, but chlorophyll has magnesium at its center, whereas hemoglobin has iron at the center. So. Now, let's talk about chlorophyll a little bit. It's one of nature's richest sources of nutrients. It's vital for the body's rapid assimilation of amino acids and synthesis of enzymes. And it's needed by plants to form chlorophyll, magnesium is. Without magnesium, the plants would not be able to take the nutrition from the sun. So this is one theme you're going to start to see emerge as we go through the lecture, that magnesium is a catalyst for many different functions that are really important for us. And when magnesium is deficient, things can die. Now, let's talk about its role with vitamin D. Vitamin D is made from sunlight hitting the skin, and the sunlight activates the cholesterol that's in the layers of the skin to form the inactive form of vitamin D. Now, magnesium has to convert that inactive form to the active form, which we can use. The Chinese ideogram for magnesium consists of the symbols for mineral and beautiful. So in other words, they consider it this beautiful mineral, and by the end of the lecture, you'll see why that is. So what does magnesium do? First of all, it's a cofactor for ATP production. ATP is created in the mitochondria, and it's the main source of energy in our cells. That's how we make energy. Inside each cell, there's all these little mitochondria, and they're making energy for all the cells' functions. But ATP must be bound to magnesium in order for it to be active. So again, you need this catalyst. Magnesium is always this catalyst to make things work. ATP is made in each of the 100 trillion cells in our body. ATP is formed from our food in a series of chemical reactions called the Krebs cycle. And 7 out of 10 enzymes in this cycle are dependent on magnesium. Here we go. Okay. So a lot of the patients that I see, on the very first visit, they'll come to me. And first, I want to know, what are they taking? Because they're taking so many of these nutraceuticals, they're called, and they're really getting themselves into trouble. Just like Vaidya said, we see more victims from Panchakarma than people actually getting help from Panchakarma. Well, I'm seeing victims every day in my practice of people taking these nutraceuticals. One of the most common ones they take is DHEA. And they'll say, well, I have adrenal insufficiency, or my adrenal glands are burnt out, so I'm taking DHEA. So a good rule of thumb is don't take things that your body already makes, because if you do, your body's going to stop making it. That's why when Vaidya came out with the Apana Agni Balance Drops, that was groundbreaking, because what that does, it helps you make more of your own digestive enzymes. We see people all the time coming in saying, I feel better, I take digestive enzymes. But then their body stops making them, see? That says, why do I have to make it? You're already taking it. So it stops. And DHEA is the same thing. So DHEA is the mother of all hormones. And it's a steroid hormone produced by the adrenal glands and the ovaries. So, of course, when your adrenal glands get weak, the amount of DHEA would become low. So the answer isn't to take it, but to help your adrenal glands and your ovaries make more. So this is one way we can help that out. DHEA is converted in the body into several different steroid hormones. Estrogen, testosterone, and other hormones is needed. See? And I see that with all types of endocrine disturbances. Every other woman I see has thyroid problems. Luckily, they wind up in our office first, and what we do, we fix the thyroid so that it can make the hormones again. But if they see a medical doctor, usually they're put on hormones, and then the thyroid says, well, then I don't have to work, I don't have to put out the hormones. But then the women still have the same problems, the weight gain, the hair loss, even though they're on the thyroid hormones. So this is a good example of that, the DHEA. Another one is melatonin. Everyone's taking that, it helps them sleep. But your pineal gland makes melatonin, and if you start taking that, that gland's going to get lazy. So this is a theme that we try to teach the patients, not to do that thing and take the thing that your body already makes. So all the steroid hormones are made from cholesterol, cortisone, hydrocortisone, aldosterone, and DHEA, and many others. And cholesterol is a very important thing. It's just a shame in modern times, doctors have convinced us that it clogs the arteries, and so people are following these low-fat diets. Just recently, they discovered it wasn't clogging the arteries, but all the literature now is saying it's going to be very difficult to tell people it's okay to have cholesterol and try to get us away from that mindset. But cholesterol cannot be synthesized without magnesium. So magnesium is a required cofactor for over 800 enzyme systems in our body. 3,751 receptor sites for magnesium have been found on human proteins. And magnesium is also a requirement for RNA and DNA production. It's a cofactor involved in transporting hormones like adrenaline into the cells because the hormones can't pass through the cell membranes by themselves. So here's another example. Magnesium is taking things in and outside of the cell, see? It's an amazing, amazing mineral that it can do something like that. Because we can make these things, but if they're not going to be used inside the cell, they're just sitting there. So magnesium helps everything to happen. Magnesium guards the outside of the cells, allowing calcium to enter the cells. I'm going to repeat that one because we're going to talk about this one a lot. Magnesium guards the outside of the cells, allowing calcium to enter the cells. So think of that. I have this image in my mind, this little magnesium ion sitting there, and it's watching what happens in the cell. It doesn't want too much magnesium to enter the cell, and in a minute we're going to talk about why that is. Vijaya already alluded to that about people's channels getting hard, so you'll see why in a second. But then you'll see what we could do about that. So it orchestrates the exact amount of calcium that's required to cause a muscle or a nerve cell to contract, and then flushing that extra calcium out to prevent excessive contraction. All these points are huge. Think about that for a minute. Your heart is a muscle. It has to contract and relax, contract and relax. If the magnesium goes low, what happens? It loses that rhythm, and then we call it an arrhythmia. So doctors give medications to stop that. The better thing would be to take magnesium, see? So again, calcium makes a contraction and magnesium relaxes it. So you need to have that ratio, and we'll talk about what the ratio is. So this is another important statistic. 30% of the energy of the cell is used to keep calcium outside of the cell. That's an amazing thing too. So you don't want too much calcium building up anywhere, inside the arteries, in the channels, anywhere. You don't want things to calcify. We'll talk a lot more about that in a minute. Now, here's some conditions caused by magnesium deficiency. It's basically everything. So, adrenal fatigue. So, adrenaline, noradrenaline, and cortisol deplete magnesium. So, what's that mean? It means when you're under stress, the magnesium just comes out. See? So, this is one main reason why almost every patient in my practice is on magnesium transdermally. Stress causes excess elimination of magnesium through the urine. Alzheimer's. Magnesium guards the outside of the cells, not allowing heavy metals to enter. Here's another example. Sitting on the outside of the cell, these heavy metals can't come in. Let's say you just had a flu shot. It's loaded with mercury, way more than what the FDA would allow. And so magnesium's there to prevent that from harming the cell. Or when little children get their shots, they have the aluminum in them. The magnesium's sitting there and preventing that from going in. And if the magnesium's not there, then problems arise. Angina. The pain of angina is caused by severe muscle spasm in the heart muscles, caused by magnesium deficiency. Again, the muscle contracts and it can't let go because the magnesium's not there. The heart ventricles have the highest levels of magnesium in the whole body, which is why magnesium is so important for the pumping function of the heart. Anxiety and panic attacks. So when the adrenals are no longer protected by sufficient magnesium, the fight or flight hormones, adrenaline and noradrenaline, become more easily triggered. So you get caught up in this vicious cycle. The more stress there is, the more you lose your magnesium, the more the adrenals go into the fight or flight response, and then it becomes where, you know, the heart gets involved from lack of magnesium and you're panicking and you have a full-blown panic attack. When you see someone having that, give them magnesium right away. But again, we use transdermally, and in a minute we'll talk about why. When they surge erratically, they could cause a rapid pulse, high blood pressure, heart palpitations. Asthma. Histamine production and bronchial spasms in the smooth muscles of the bronchial tract. Same thing there. They both increase as a result of magnesium deficiency. So that's why magnesium is considered a great bronchodilator. See, it relaxes the lungs, relaxes everything. Atherosclerosis with calcium deposits. Here's an example of a channel getting clogged with calcium. Magnesium is necessary to help dissolve calcium and keep it soluble in the bloodstream. We're going to talk about that in a minute, too. Bowel disease. Magnesium deficiency slows down bowel peristalsis, causing constipation. See, the magnesium helps the bowel to move. That's why if you take magnesium orally, we don't recommend it. It's too strong. It gives diarrhea. It goes through the system too fast. It never gets absorbed so well. It's also indicated with depression. Serotonin, which elevates the mood, is dependent on magnesium. Again, everything's dependent on magnesium. Detoxification. Magnesium is crucial for removal of toxins and heavy metals from the body. Magnesium is a cofactor in the production of glutathione and the function of the P450 detoxification systems in the liver. So the main antioxidant in your body is called glutathione. That's why Dr. Mishra made this last year, this glutathione cream. With too much infiltration of toxins into the body, too many immunizations, it disrupts and corrupts the glutathione system. Then the body can't remove its toxins, see, but magnesium is needed to make the glutathione. And the major detoxifying system in the liver is the P450 detox system, and that's also magnesium dependent. Magnesium plays a huge role with diabetes, too. In all the books I read on it, there were chapters and chapters just on diabetes, because it enhances insulin secretion and it allows insulin to transfer glucose into the cell. See, again, sitting on the outside of the cell, it's dictating what can go in. It's so intelligent, magnesium. The cells, again, all these things are just sitting there, but the magnesium is dictating if the calcium goes in, insulin goes in, what comes out. Otherwise, the glucose and insulin build up in the blood, causing various types of tissue damage. Headaches. I can't tell you how many patients come to me with headaches. Headaches, I've had patients where we do everything. They're changing their diet, cooling down the liver. They're doing well, but they're still getting some headaches. And it's like the minute we give the magnesium, then they say the headaches go away. And that's because they prevent muscle tension in the neck and head muscles when applied locally, but they also prevent the spasms of the muscles of the walls of the arteries, which trigger headaches. This is an important thing, that your arteries have a lot of magnesium in them. I'm going to show you a graphic of it in just a minute. But magnesium can dilate those arteries back out, and then the pressure goes down on the head. That's why it's used for high blood pressure. With low magnesium and too much calcium, the muscles in the blood vessels can go into a spasm and cause high blood pressure. See, it depends where the magnesium is, what it's affecting. It could cause headaches if the muscles in the neck and the vessels of the head are lacking in magnesium. It can cause problems with arrhythmias in the heart, and the muscles can spasm there, see. Or in the arteries, they can contract and the blood pressure will go up. Hardening of the arteries. this is a real important one. This is what we were talking about this morning, where the vessels get hard. As acid toxins build up, and now you know the name of those, they're Amavisha and Garvisha, they create inflammation in the walls of the arteries. And if calcium is high and magnesium is low, the calcium can start depositing in the arterial wall, creating hardening or plaque. You know when you injure something, sometimes you'll get a calcium buildup. You ever bang your wrist? Patients come in all the time and say, you know, I hit my wrist and now I have this big lump of calcium there. So calcium gets deposited whenever there's been an injury. So if you constantly have Amavisha and Garvisha circulating through the walls of the arteries, it's creating inflammation. So the calcium will start to come and deposit there. And then you wind up with what we call hardening of the arteries, and then the blood pressure goes up. Inflammation. Calcium is extremely pro-inflammatory, and magnesium is anti-inflammatory. So you have to keep a balance between the two. Again, it's not recommended to take calcium supplements. They remain stuck in the channel, and if magnesium is low, it can create inflammation and other problems, like hardening of the arteries and heart attacks. I remember years ago, Vijay telling me, you know, he would say, when I feel someone's pulse and they're taking calcium, it feels like it's just stuck in the channel and it's not absorbing in the cells. And later I read research that said the same thing, that people who were taking calcium was creating a lot of heart attacks because it wasn't absorbing, see? So. And we come from a culture that values calcium. As soon as we hear about, oh, I have osteoporosis, people think, oh, I have to take calcium. But the opposite's true. Calcium cannot build bones without magnesium. And this is another important point. See, calcium alone makes the bones brittle. Think of a piece of chalk breaking as it hits the floor. There's all calcium in there. That's how the bones get with calcium, just brittle. But magnesium makes the bones flexible, see, and resistant to shattering. Most people have too much calcium and not enough magnesium. And all the books on magnesium say then your bones are really going to suffer if you start taking the calcium supplements, not, you know, let alone all the other parts of the body, hardening of the arteries and all that. Plus, the calcium most people take is inert or synthetic calcium. Put a calcium supplement in a glass of water and it just sits there. But if you add magnesium, it breaks it down, see? So just like in your arteries, if you have your blood or your bones building up calcium, the magnesium makes it more pliable, but the magnesium is, we call it the antidote to calcium. If there's too much calcium in the blood, because it's very easy to get calcium in your diet and it's much more difficult to get magnesium. So if that starts to happen, then things start to get hard. Effects on the muscles. So low magnesium causes cramping of the muscles, leading to what we were alluding to, heart arrhythmias, painful menstrual cycles, calf muscle pain, we call that Charlie horses, twitching of the eyelids. These are all examples of your body telling you that your magnesium is too low. And all these go away right away when you just apply the magnesium roll-on down the spine or use some of the magnesium oils, which we'll talk about in a minute. So effects on the mitochondria. So the mitochondria are very important for our health. And a healthy cell has high magnesium and low calcium. See, that's healthy. High magnesium, low calcium. That's why the magnesium sits on the outside of the cell, keeps ushering the calcium out, keep it out of there. In fact, the higher the calcium level and the lower the magnesium level in the extracellular fluid, the harder it is for the cells to pump the calcium out. Then, if you have low magnesium levels in the cells, the mitochondria gradually calcify, which can cause less energy production. When I read that, that kind of blew my mind, to think that your mitochondria can calcify. That's a real dangerous thing, because the mitochondria are little powerhouses found within most cells, and they're responsible for producing most of the body's energy. This is very important for the heart, because the heart muscles have a never-ending need for energy. That's why there's a lot of mitochondria in the heart cells. They're also important for proper nerve transmission and are highly concentrated in the brain and the central nervous system. So then, what that means, calcification of the mitochondria is implicated in a lot of brain diseases like Parkinson's and MS. Effects on aging. So again, the power plant of the human cells is the mitochondria. That's where all the energy, the ATP, is made. Generates energy for the cell to use. When the cells are low in magnesium relative to calcium, problems arise. The calcium pump at the cell membrane is magnesium dependent. Again, magnesium sitting there on the outside, keeping the calcium out of the cell. So without magnesium, the cellular calcium pump slows down. The end result is that the mitochondria, the powerhouse of the cell and the entire body, becomes calcified. And this is the beginning of aging. Every function of your body can be slowed down or inhibited when the mitochondria calcify. And they say that our biochemical age is determined by the ratio of magnesium to calcium within our cells and how much your mitochondria is aging. Magnesium acts as an antioxidant against free radical damage of the mitochondria, so it protects the mitochondria. Again, the ratio of calcium to magnesium is vital for cell membranes and the blood-brain barrier. See, the little children that get all these shots, there's something called a blood-brain barrier, and the magnesium's preventing, you know, any toxin from going in. The problem is all the shots now have aluminum as a preservative, and here it says that aluminum can replace magnesium in the brain, which leaves the calcium channels in the brain nerve cells wide open, allowing the calcium to come in and cause cellular death. See, and also because the shots damage the glutathione system, the main antioxidant system, then these chemicals can go in and they damage the actual blood-brain barrier, and then they make their way into the brain and damage the brain. Now here it says the optimum calcium to magnesium ratio. The average diet has a 10-to-1 ratio of calcium to magnesium. That's just on a daily basis. We eat about 10 times more calcium than magnesium. However, the ideal ratio is 1-to-1, distributed throughout the diet through diet, supplements, and alkaline spring water. You can get most of your calcium from food, but magnesium usually needs to be supplemented because the soil is so depleted nowadays, and when you boil the food or the vegetables in water, they lose the magnesium, but they don't lose the calcium. Magnesium chloride is the best, and that's what Vija's transdermal magnesium is. It's magnesium chloride. Transdermal application is the best. Oral supplementation, again, can create diarrhea. Also, it's good to take magnesium through the several fatty layers of the skin for better absorption and activation. See, the skin has all this fat in it, all this cholesterol. That's why when the sun hits it, we make the vitamin D. But it's best if the magnesium goes through those layers for better absorption of it, and it activates it too. Magnesium chloride versus magnesium sulfate, which is Epsom salts. Because a lot of patients say, well, I have Epsom salts, I think I'll just use those. But Epsom salts contain magnesium sulfate. The sulfate form is more rapidly excreted through the kidneys and much more difficult to assimilate in the whole body. Thus, the effects of Epsom salt baths do not last long. They help, but they help and then they go away. But the effects of magnesium chloride last much longer in the body. The sulfate form has to be converted into the chloride form anyway, so it's better to start out with magnesium chloride. For purposes of cellular detoxification and tissue purification, the most effective form of magnesium is magnesium chloride. It has a strong excretory effect on toxins stuck in the tissues of the body, drawing them out and through the pores of the skin. So let's talk about transdermal versus oral application. Most magnesium supplements are made from the wrong form of magnesium. Again, oral supplementation is not very effective because of the low bowel tolerance. I've had several patients tell me they have to take magnesium in order to move their bowels because it gives you diarrhea. But when they go for a colonoscopy, the doctors tell them, oh, I can tell you take magnesium as a laxative, don't you? And they say, well, how do you know? They say, because your bowel's all damaged with these striations, it's called, all these areas of damage they can see from the magnesium on the wall of the bowel wall with prolonged use. passes through the digestive tract too quickly and it creates low levels of absorption. Transdermal application bypasses the liver. And that's again why Vajra made so many remedies to put on the skin. So we could just give the liver a break. Don't let it have to process so many remedies coming in. And it provides less of a chance of an overdose or an underdose. The skin, as we know, is very porous, allowing many substances in or out of the body. Thus, it can take in the magnesium easily and can eliminate many toxins back out through the skin. The skin is the largest organ in the body. Here's the calcium to magnesium ratio in foods. The only food I could find that had the perfect ratio was yellow squash and green zucchini. And see, Vijaya's always been saying to help your body maintain its alkalinity or to bring the alkalinity back. He's always telling people have yellow squash and green zucchini. Milk has 7-to-1 ratio. It doesn't mean stop drinking milk, but it just means that if you have a lot of milk in the diet, you have to make sure you have good magnesium levels. Otherwise, it could start calcifying your channels and everything else. Yogurt's 11-to-1 ratio. Calcium fortified orange juice is 27-to-1, and that's probably a synthetic form of calcium. And N-acids are 100-to-1. Well, I guess that would be like Tums and those types of things, yeah. The recommended daily allowance for adult males is 420 milligrams and 320 milligrams for adult females. Now, this next part shows you how the intake of magnesium has declined through the years. From 1909, it was about 408 milligrams a day, already still below what we should be getting from men. Then it became 368 in 1949, 349 by 1980. And now women are getting 228 milligrams a day. That's about half of what's needed. And 323 milligram a day for men. That was in 1985, and it's probably even lower now because the soil's so depleted. So here's foods high in magnesium, if you want to jot these down. Whole wheat, coconut, spinach, avocado, sunflower seeds, dandelion greens, raisins, green peas, blackberries, beets, broccoli, cilantro. Cilantro has a lot. When I read about that, they said it's like loaded with magnesium. And when you stop writing, I'm going to talk about this next issue. This is important. So just let me know when you have those vegetables written down. So I'm still writing. Okay. Every time I take on a new patient, I always go through their diet with a fine-tooth comb, and I start to see patterns emerge there. One of the big mistakes I'm seeing a lot of people making nowadays, they're juicing kale. Any of you out there juicing kale or spinach? They have these Vitamixes now, and people are juicing. Or they're eating spinach salads, and kale salads are all the rage now. The problem is these dark green leafy vegetables have oxalic acid in the greens, and they prevent the absorption of magnesium. It's an ironic thing because they actually contain a lot of magnesium, but if you cook the greens, the oxalic acid evaporates out, so then you're okay. So that's why we want to make sure we have cooked greens, like the green protein and cooked spinach. But so many of the new patients are coming in and they're making like kale juice and spinach juice with their new Vitamixes. Also, the tannin in tea binds and removes all minerals, including magnesium, from the body. Phytic acid is found in the hulls of seeds and the bran of grains, and it can form insoluble compounds with magnesium and other minerals, causing them to be eliminated rather than absorbed. Soaking the grains and seeds overnight in water removes the phytic acid. So from what I was reading, they were saying, you know, if you were, you know, like a vegan and you're eating a lot of grains and these, you're juicing kale, you could see you're going to be losing a lot of magnesium here. I always wondered why the vegans that I saw, where they have no animal products in the diet, were my more sick patients, even though they're telling me they're having fruits, vegetables, grains, lentils every day. The diet's not processed. but they became highly acidic, and they started developing autoimmune diseases at a really young age, even as teenagers. And then as I studied this, I could see why, because these are the types of foods they're eating. So if you find you're eating a lot of grains, it's best to soak them overnight in water. Also, freshly squeezed orange juice has a lot of magnesium in it. So here's some causes of magnesium deficiency. Notice the first thing says synthetic vitamin C. See, if you get vitamin C in fruits and vegetables, that's different. But the synthetic version of anything gives you bad side effects. And a lot of patients I see are taking calcium, vitamin C. You know, we have even in our area these holistic doctors, and they're injecting people with high doses of vitamin C. Vitamin C, the synthetic version, competes with magnesium, and it pulls it out of the system. Also, a poor diet is always going to be low in magnesium. If you're drinking water, which is lacking minerals from the earth, prescription medications pull magnesium out, like bronchodilators, insulin, digitalis, antibiotics, corticosteroids, and cocaine. Stress depletes magnesium. Also, eating sugar, and I had read this, and then I was trying to find the actual research, and I couldn't find it for this PowerPoint, but there was some number like for every molecule of sugar you eat, it takes like 18 molecules of magnesium to break it down. Like, it really depletes magnesium a lot to eat white table sugar. Malabsorption, lack of friendly bacteria in the gut can cause magnesium deficiency along with every other thing. And taking calcium supplements. Calcium pushes the magnesium out. Alcohol, coffee, sodas, and from what I read, the phosphorus in the sodas just really depletes magnesium. So if any of your kids are drinking a lot of sodas, you have to get them to stop doing that. Birth control pills, nicotine, they all pull magnesium out. And this is another important one. Almost every patient I see now, when they test their vitamin D, it's low. And here, they're all taking vitamin D from their doctors, and synthetic vitamin D binds magnesium and pulls it out of the body. So synthetic vitamin D causes way more harm than good. It causes a lot of problems, but in this situation, it's pulling the magnesium out. Then your bones will really suffer. I actually was thinking of maybe doing another PowerPoint on just vitamin D for the next class we ever have, because it turns out that like the lower levels are better than these higher levels, they're saying. That research is just coming out now. Because everyone getting tested, the levels are low, and now they're saying, well, they're supposed to be low. So it's like everything we ever do is wrong, you know. So it's good to learn these things. So here's a relationship between magnesium, selenium, and zinc. Selenium helps the magnesium stay inside your cells where it belongs. And the neat thing is it only takes 2 Brazil nuts every day to give the RDA of selenium, so that's easy. And zinc helps the absorption of magnesium, too. And zinc is found in spinach, cashews, chicken, and split mung dal. So if you want to write those down. I'm sure it's in the sprouted, too. The percent of magnesium lost during food processing. 80% of magnesium is lost in the refining of wheat. 83% is lost in the refining of rice. 99% is lost when you make white sugar from molasses. And when vegetables are boiled, magnesium is lost into the water. But less calcium is lost, say, when you cook. See, it's making the average diet higher in calcium than magnesium. So, for example, one slice of whole wheat bread has 24 milligrams of magnesium, but one slice of white bread only has 6. See how much they remove there? The usual gradient is 10,000 times more calcium outside of the cells than inside. I thought that was another amazing statistic. So that's why magnesium is so important. It has to keep that calcium out. Increased intracellular, that means inside the cell where we don't want it. Increased intracellular calcium occurs when someone is seriously ill, acute or chronic. And in these situations, you have to restore the magnesium. Now, as far as our pulse diagnosis, of course, how to feel the effects of low magnesium in the pulse. So again, magnesium is basically the antidote to calcium. When there's not enough magnesium, calcium just runs wild throughout the body, constricting the arteries here, making the body more rigid. And this is, again, how we age. As we get older, we get really, literally, like hardening of everything, the arteries. You'll feel a hardness in the channels when magnesium is low, because, see, the calcium is depositing in the channels. So let's look at an artery, one type of channel. The endothelial cells, endo means the inner, so the very inner lining of the cells, there's a single layer of cells that form the inside membrane of the artery. So that's where the blood's going to flow, so you don't want amavisha in there, garvisha. The next layer is a very thin connective tissue that contains elastin, see? When we were dissecting cadavers in chiropractic college, one thing they showed us was that when they're young, like all your ligaments are real soft when you're young. You could feel someone's pulse who's young. It's real soft. Feel someone's pulse who's 80 or 90. It's very hard, see? And so they told us when we were dissecting the cadavers that when you're young, the ligaments are like rubber bands. But as you age, they're like real hard. And they did. They looked exactly like steel. Remember that, Katie, dissecting the cadavers? Those ligaments were like steel. But see, so the main point I'm making here is you need magnesium to prevent that hardening of the body. Otherwise, you can bend over and just pop a ligament because it's so tight. We've all done that. See, but when you're young, that doesn't happen so much. So we want to keep the body nice and pliable, and that's what magnesium does. That's why the Chinese called it the beautiful mineral. So this layer is responsible. It keeps the elasticity in your arteries. Those muscles have to maintain their elasticity. And your body requires magnesium to maintain healthy elastin. One of the earliest signs of magnesium deficiency is degeneration of elastin in the subendothelium. Now, the next layer is a smooth muscle. There's muscles in your arteries to contract to move the blood through. They provide integrity and control the dilation of the artery. If it's tight, you're going to have high blood pressure, but if it's nice and relaxed, the pressure won't go up. It's like stepping on a garden hose. You step on it, the pressure's going to go up. And this is all triggered by that calcium to magnesium ratio in your body. So again, calcium causes contraction and magnesium causes relaxation. So together, these control the blood pressure and the flow in the artery. For all of our blood pressure patients, I make sure, even though we're using the sarpaganda drops, and that, I make sure they have enough magnesium. So let's actually look at the structure of the artery wall. So this is not as difficult to understand as it might look. That fancy word there, tunica, it just means layer. So basically they're showing you three layers. Intima means inner, media is the middle layer, and externa is the external layer. So this is all really easy to understand. At every layer, magnesium is there. See, you have the endothelium there, keeping the arteries nice and soft. And then you have the smooth muscle layer, keeping the muscle pliable and able to dilate, see? And then you have this elastic membrane, the elastin, and it needs magnesium to keep it nice and supple and pliable. Otherwise, what happens? The artery gets hard, pressure goes up. This is why as people age, they get high blood pressure. But again, the doctors give the medicine just to lower it without just looking at these real simple things. There's another messenger for dilation. Dilation means it opens and relaxes, is nitric oxide, which is dependent on magnesium. You know, people take nitroglycerin, that's what this is, and it opens it up. But for that to work, you need magnesium. Animals on low magnesium diets lose the elasticity of their arterial system. And the coronary arteries, that means the heart arteries, they require even more elasticity than other arteries because they have to stretch and flex as the heart expands and contracts and is pumping blood out, see? So let's look at the inflammatory response. Inflammation begins with injury of the artery wall. Again, from amavisha and garvisha. These are acidic toxins. And again, at this stage, if there's too much calcium, not enough magnesium in the bloodstream, the excess calcium precipitates around the area of inflammation almost to protect it in the artery wall. Then the area becomes rigid and interferes with blood flow. The blood pressure can go up. The heart muscle weakens as it tries to force blood through the hardened and constricted arteries. You know, it has to work hard. See? Thus, magnesium maintains the elasticity of the artery wall, dilates the blood vessels, prevents calcium deposits, and is necessary for the maintenance of healthy muscles, including the heart muscle itself. Now, Ayurvedically speaking, magnesium can balance all three, vata, pitta, and kapha. Sometimes we have some herbs that are good for balancing vata. Some are cooling to pitta. You know, the vata herbs pacify the nervous system, kapha. So here we have one remedy that's good for all three. And it can both build up the tissues, can nourish, and it can detoxify them, which is also an unusual thing. Sometimes we give herbs and, you know, protocols for nourishing, and then other times we detoxify, and we kind of go back and forth between the two, but magnesium does both. And again, I wrote here, feel the pulse of an elderly patient. You'll feel it's hard. It's just real hard. You can feel the stiffness in the channels. As soon as you press in, that's the channels you're feeling. It's independent of the subdoshas. It's very easy to feel. But use our transdermal products for 6 months, and you'll feel the softening of the channels occur. It's a really great thing, and you feel like you're reversing the aging in that person. Now, here's some practical tips for pulse diagnosis. One thing I find, and a lot of people, you'll feel the pulse, and it's just vyana vata. It's just overtaking the pulse. And it's hard to feel all the other variations in the pulse and the subdoshas. What I found is if you apply ashwagandha cream to the pulse, right away, a lot of that vyana goes down, and you can immediately retake the pulse, and then you can feel all the variations. It's much easier to feel. And as vyana goes down, it's much easier to feel those imbalances. Now, so here's some patient recommendations. The antidote to calcium is magnesium. The antidote to high cortisol release, you know, some people when they're under stress, they go right into that fight or flight response. We use ashwagandha, that's the main one, to help prevent the adrenals from releasing so much cortisol. Cortisol shrinks the channels down. And or tulsi. Tulsi is another one of those, they're called adaptogens, so that you can adapt to the stress better. Not the way we give them. Transdermal ashwagandha. Yeah, we hardly ever, I don't think in the last 10 years I've used one tablet of ashwagandha because it does heat the liver. Tulsi's hot, yeah. That's what I'm saying. No one has done what Vaidya's done. Everybody needs ashwagandha, and everybody's liver is hot. So now we have all these ashwagandha drops and maha ashwagandha and transdermal. See. And I have so many patients coming in taking ashwagandha, I have to take them off that, the tablets. I had a patient about a month ago. She had the worst high blood pressure. She says, I don't know why it's high. Every day I take, you know, she says to me, turmeric is anti-inflammatory. I'm taking a tablespoon of turmeric every morning, and I take 4 tablets of ashwagandha every day, and I read online that garlic is good for blood pressure. So I'm making this garlic juice, and I'm drinking it. And she went on and on. She goes, and I love soy. I just eat so much soy. Her arteries and channels were so inflamed and hot and clogged, and, you know, so see that's the difference with what we're doing than what we're reading, like, oh, garlic's good for blood pressure and, you know, ashwagandha's good for stress. The antidote to vyana vata is slow down, go to bed early by 10 o'clock. Thank you. Proper rest, meditation. Meditation's the best thing. I mean, if you don't meditate, that alone, it just brings all the stress down, and then your whole physiology is regenerating. Don't overuse the senses. The antidote to high acidity in the physiology is an alkaline SVA diet, cooling of the liver with DGL cream, liver clay, bumi amla, which is one of my favorite herbs. And if you're a patient of mine, you're probably on that. Avoidance of onions and garlic. Never skip or delay meals, and don't entertain negativity. All these make the heat in the liver go high. Don't take so many herbs and nutraceuticals. Some clinical applications of transdermal magnesium. For cataract reversal, What you do, you apply transdermal magnesium roll-on to the suboccipital region where the marmopoints are for the eyes. So I researched this. Cataracts are caused by, I was wondering one day, I thought, everybody has cataracts. And as they age, they get cataracts. And I thought, I wonder if it's calcium depositing like everywhere else, if it's depositing in the lens of the eyes. And I Googled it, and there it was. So it says, caused by loss of elasticity of the lens. So your lens and your eyes is also elastic. And then calcium starts depositing into the lens, and it makes it cloudy. So when you look at lights, there's this halo. So what I found was, if you apply it under the, you know, where the marmopoints are. First, I tried applying it around the eyes, and it burnt the eyes. So you can't do that. But you can use the ALA cream, the alpha lipoic acid cream, and that cools these channels here, so it keeps everything cool. But then when I applied it suboccipitally, right away, the symptoms of the cataracts, like, it was almost like they were dissolving. It was like a miracle. For headaches, apply magnesium roll-on down the spine and on the forehead. You have a bad headache, just be careful with your eyes, but, you know, rub some on your head and your temples and down the spine. Yeah. Everybody's different. You know, if it's, they're just beginning, they're much easier to reverse than if they're really hard. And that's true with anything, hardening of the arteries. It's going to be hard for someone who's 95 years old to get their pulse pliable. You know, but if you're 50 years old and you're starting to get that hardening, reverse it now, you know, or slow it up as much as you can. Also use the ALA cream in the same areas, you know, like for your headaches, to decrease the swelling and heat in the capillaries, opening up the channels to reduce the pressure. I mean, that ALA cream, that's amazing. We can do so much with that because so many problems are with the arteries just getting engorged with so much hot blood. And so if we apply that, it's like they just relax, and then the blood comes out, and it helps the headaches and all these conditions with the eyes, the pressure in the eyes. The blood pressure. Use magnesium roll-on and or any of the magnesium oils, Vata oil with magnesium and vitamin D for Abhyanga daily. We have magnesium oil. We have Pitta magnesium oil. So there's lots of ways you can get magnesium transdermally. What's that? Yeah, ashwagandha and magnesium oil too. So that's another way we get the ashwagandha in. That's really good for our thyroid patients, that remedy. And for arrhythmias, use magnesium roll-on, super sport cream, and Arjuna cream down the spine twice a day, and extra whenever the arrhythmias are occurring. See, the heart needs a constant supply of prana, and as soon as there's some obstruction in the nadis, and it doesn't get the full supply, then the heartbeat will go irregular. And super sport opens up the nadis, you know that now, and Arjuna is the best herb for the heart. And then the magnesium's in there to prevent the spasming of the arteries. I've had so many patients with arrhythmias that just kind of clear up and go away when we use this protocol. For menstrual cramps, just apply the magnesium roll-on in the lower abdomen where the uterus is and in the lower spine. Also use Prakrit cream down the lower spine. Have them swipe it downward 7 or 14 times. It pulls the apana down. And you know now apana is that energy that moves down. It brings down the menstrual fluid, the bowel movement. It's a downward flow. So if it's moving up, then you can have severe menstrual cramps. So the Prakrit cream works real well to pull the apana down, and then the magnesium prevents the cramping of the uterine muscles. I would like to express gratitude. I'm going to get weepy, to the divine SVA lineage and thank them for inspiring Vaidya Mishra to make all these formulations, which make it easy for us practitioners in the field to help alleviate so much suffering in the world. God bless you, Vaidya Mishra. Thank you.